You're winning.
So, Alan, in our project, and especially in this 1,000-year look at history, what's the significance of this village?
This is a village to which I've been coming for some 30-odd years. I come back every year, and I have a family here, and I have a house here, and friends, and it means a lot to me. But it's not merely that the people themselves mean a lot to me, because they are the famous martial races who were recruited into the British Gurkhas, the Gurungs. But it's also intellectually very interesting, because here, because of the terrain, you can't have the penetration of all the technologies of modern civilization. You can't have cars, you don't have electricity, you don't have mains water, you don't have mains sanitation, you don't have any health post, nothing. So basically, when you come here, you're moving back at least 1,000 years in human history, and you're seeing what it must have been like over most of the world before all these things happened. So you see people using basically their bodies, their backs, their legs, their arms, and also animals and plants to try and rest from this terribly rugged terrain. This is like farming on one of the steepest inclines of a great mountain in England. It's terribly difficult, and yet the human body against this somehow wrests a living out of it. And watching how they do it, their social organization, their belief systems, helps you to understand history over a long period. We've almost forgotten in the West what it must have been like to live like this. And yet most of human history was like this, so that's really why I come.
Or at least not general, not applied to the rest of Europe, so.
One might argue that a place like this is exceptional in that most parts of the world aren't quite as steep as this. And that's true, but it's also true of almost every place. Every place is special, and this is special in certain ways. This is like parts of Europe. It's like the Swiss Alpine parts of Europe, not very different from that. And there are areas where you have terraced agriculture in Europe, but it's obviously not like the great flat plains of Central Europe. But it's not the ecology and so on that's really interesting. It's the fact that over most of Europe, even the flat bits, you had people who were basically using pre-industrial power systems. Their only source of energy was from the sun through plants and animals, and they had to think of ways of doing this. And in that deep sense, it teaches us a lesson over the whole world, even though the particularities are different.
And in terms of the particular circumstances here, I mean, in terms of, you know, if we were trying to look at the differences between Europe and Asia, in terms of the crops and things, what other useful things can we find here?
Well, in some ways this village, I'll start again. This village is based on two crop systems. It's based on rice agriculture in the lower half of the, right down to the river at the bottom. And in the top half, they grow hard grains of Europe. They grow maize and millet. And that contrast is really one of the very deepest contrasts between civilizations. Western Europe was a hard grain growing area. And Asia, China, Japan, and India grew wet rice, in parts anyway. So by watching the different ways in which they process, plant, and develop these, you can see something which I think was one of the major reasons for the great change and divergence between civilizations. The odd feature of rice, and this is something else that one should mention, is that there are really very few advantages in mechanizing rice production. It's very difficult on these terraces to mechanize the production. You can have just a very light agricultural system. Human labor, until you get very advanced machines, human labor is better at growing rice than machines. And another feature which is terribly important, which one should also add, is that the social structure of rice is very different from feudal Europe. Here, there's no advantage in having a huge area under rice owned by one person. The best way to develop rice cultivation is to have very small plots run by family farms. And that's what you have here. And that means that you have a peasant social structure with very few large landlords. Whereas in Europe, the Romans discovered that the best way to run dry grain agriculture was to have huge estates and to have slaves. So curiously, in Asia, you don't really get the development of the kind of slavery that you got under the Roman Empire. You got self-slavery, people working very hard in their families to produce things. Now, that is a great difference. The fact that you don't get much advantage by mechanizing the actual growing of the rice also applies to the final grinding process. There is about two-thirds of their grains come from the rice fields. The last third, which they do have to grind, is just the sort of supplement, and they can grind that as they need it. They don't do a whole lot. They grind it as they need it and keep it. There are little water mills, and they used to traditionally take the grain down to these little water mills. So they had little mills, but the last factor is that these little mills didn't make much money. They were owned by a family. There was little capital investment in them. There was no monopoly, so if you started charging too much, someone would build another little mill. In Europe, of course, you got the monopoly of milling by the landlords, and they forced people to use these larger and larger, more and more complicated mills. So you get this kind of divergence. I've been coming to this village for over 30 years now, and I come back every year. I come for two reasons, really. One is to see all my friends and my adopted family here. We live in a little house in the village, and we spend a little part of each year studying how the village is changing over time. But there's another reason, which is the intellectual reason for coming here. These people are the Gurungs. They are the famous group who are recruited, one of the famous groups recruited into the British Gurkhas. And they live a way of life which is so interesting and unusual that it helps me think about the past. That's because this village, perched right up on this ridge, is inaccessible to the road, and therefore there are no motor cars. There's also no electricity. There's no mains gas, there's no mains water, there's no mains sanitation. And so, in a sense, when you come here, you're moving back 1,000 years at least in human history. And you can see what it must have been like all over the world before all these things occurred. So you can go back behind the technological revolution to a world in which human beings lived off energy from the sun through plants and animals, which they processed themselves with the help of those plants and animals. Basically here, you are in a pre-wheel culture, one of the very few left in the world, where instead of the wheel, human beings use their back, their arms, their legs, very simple technology. But they have adapted their social system and their religious system to cope with the stress of living on this very steep mountainside, like some Lake District peak, and farming, moving energy up and down here, and living reasonably in this way. So as a historian, usually one is studying through documents and archives, but here you can actually see a system like this working. And although in some ways it's particular and peculiar and different, at a very deep level it shares with the whole of the world 1,000 years ago this characteristic that it's human labor with animals and plants that makes life possible.
Okay, I'm rolling now, Alan, so why don't you tell me what the riddle is that we're going to be dealing with in this film?
It's clear that some hundreds of years ago, Europe and Asia diverged. Europe had a scientific revolution and an industrial revolution, and Asia didn't have those things. So why was this divergence? Well, some of the factors include the technology of time, clocks, technology of space, glass, and there was obviously a growing divergence between the two ends of Eurasia in that respect. But then the question is pushed back, well, why that divergence? In order to answer that, you have to pursue another line of inquiry, and you have to widen your perspective even more in time and go back well before the beginnings of glass and clocks to at least 1,000 years ago. And if you're trying to wonder why you get this divergence, which had begun at least 1,000 years ago. There's really no better place to come than a village like this. This is a Gurung village. The Gurungs are the people who are recruited into the British Gurkhas, set in the high Himalayas. And this is a wonderful place to study the divergence of agricultural systems at the two ends of Eurasia, because it's preserved a technology and an agriculture which has been wiped out in most of the world because of modern mechanization. This is one of the very few places where the wheel has not penetrated. There are no cars, no wheelbarrows, no other uses of the wheel. And also there's no electricity, no mains water, and so on. So you can study here in detail what the world was like 1,000 years ago. But also you can study in particular the consequences of rice cultivation, which is what they cultivate in the lower fields here, as compared to the upper fields, which are hard grain. So you've got, in a microcosm, Asia and Europe within this village, and you've got the contrast between this and Europe. So it's intellectually fascinating to be here.